Satsang with Maitreya, January 19th, 2002.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Amishya Maitreya's Satsang Room and our Sadhu Church. This is Maitreya. I'll be standing with you for the next 2 hours. And hopefully, we will learn from each other. We learn that the last revelation of God has come to earth. The religions are unified. Prophets are fulfilled, and all expectation from all religion has been fulfilled here, and we have got the revelation of God for humanity. This is the time of sundering. This is time to see who is for God and who is against God for humanity, so they can make the decision and their kingdom will come. After each person makes their own decision of following the eternal divine path, which is the base of our teaching, of following the tradition, the religion, the background, the culture, or whatever that keeps them from seeing the truth in the mission's teaching and the education of our religion on earth. So this is the time that every person has to hear this message at least once. That's why we are trying to reach all humanity in all levels, in every corner of the earth. And of course, God has provided us with the tool to do that, so the whole world can hear our voice and see us in the internet and know that the last revelation has come. No other prophet ever had all the schools available to them, and no other prophet had so many people being so highly educated and so highly trained to be able to accomplish much more than any other people ever could have done to this point. So we can see that we have many, many opportunities and ability to reach out and give this message to every human. I am not here to give you experiences as the people in the mystical path probably can give you, because the mystical path is not the ultimate, as we will see. I'm not here to teach you how to live in the comings of light, because you have been living in the comings of light for many lifetimes, and hopefully you know by now how does it work to live in the comings of light. That means not being self-centered and be able to sacrifice for it and surrender something to be a big of God and become a universalist. I'm not here to teach you how to sacrifice, because you have had sacrifice before and you have learned how to sacrifice, and you will know how that works because you have done it many lifetimes. I'm not here to teach you how to surrender something to God that Prophet Muhammad brought to you and taught you to do it, and you probably were with him and you learned how to do that. And I'm not here to teach you how to become a universalist that brought by Bab and Baha'u'llah, and they taught us how to become a universalist. We are looking for elects, the people who have awakened their spiritual forces for many lifetimes. They know how to live in the communities of light, and they love to live in the communities of light, and they are ready to sacrifice for it and surrender something and become a universalist, so they become an elect. I am a way surer, the explainer, the unifier that have brought all this to you so you can see the plan of God in full. But the plan of God is in full as an individual. His mission and his good manifestation on earth has come after 12,000 years of being hidden. Now all the truth has come to us. And now it's the decision of every individual, do they want to teach this teaching, or they want to follow their own teaching, tradition, or culture, gender, race, or whatever they are at. You have to drop all of them. If you have a tradition, if you have a gender, if you have a culture, culture, if you have a religion, you cannot follow the eternal divine path completely. So if you are not following the eternal divine path completely, you cannot be an elect. You become a lukewarm and not completely manifest God. Therefore, it's the call to the elect, call to those who see this teaching in school, and you say, no, I have no culture, I have no tradition, I have no gender, I have no attachment to anything that keeps me from seeing this vision in full. Therefore, you can see this is a great revelation that makes sense. It has a lot of truth in it. But decision is yours. As always, God has given every person the free will to make the decision. Your decision. You make the decision. But what the result is going to be, of course, is God. Because God told us what He wants us to do. Now, if we do not follow His will, we are following our will. Therefore, the result is created by going against the will, which will lead us to the pure consciousness, or Godhead, or Nirvana, or oneness with God, or return home. You can call it many names and words, but the end is the same. The path is eternal divine path. Eternal divine path consists of five steps and two results. The five steps is awakening of the spiritual forces. Awakening of the spiritual forces covers all the mystical path on earth. No matter what the path is, what there is in the world, it teaches you know thyself to know God. That is the part of the mystical path. Of course, that covers Hinduism, Buddhism, Kabbalah, mystical Christianity, Sufism, and any other ism or teaching that teaches, know thyself, because the self, the Atman, in each person is the same as God. You have the essence of God in you. Even Christ called, thou art God. You are God. Of course, it's a small g. He didn't create the universe. So, a lot of people have become very egoistical and they say, I am God. And okay, did you create the universe? Are you manifesting the compassion and love and understanding and beauty of God through yourself, and you have the grace? Just knowing you have the essence doesn't mean you are, God with the big G. Only God with the big G created the universe. You are co-creator. You are in the image of God. Therefore, you have to realize that also we are God with the small G. We still have to listen to the God with the big G so we can return to the Godhead, not become more egoistical and fall from the grace. Because the only thing keep us from the grace is ego, really. Ego is something that we are holding like an umbrella at the top of our head, and we are not letting the grace of God come through. Grace of God is always showering. He has no choice. He has full of grace that He does love to give it away. But who is willing to receive it? That is the real question. As well as we have the ego at the top of our head, like an umbrella, and saying, no, I'm going to follow my own teaching and my own will and my own culture and my own religion, then we never can get to the God's culture, God's religion, God's, truth. So we have to, overcome that ego that keeps us from completely seeing this vision and surrender and submit to it and teach it to others. Of course, it's being taught the gospel of God, the holiest of the holiest, though he's been read to humanity through our internet room, in this room every day. It's been discussed all over the place. The book is available. Our teacher will be traveling through the summer, all over the United States, or even if he's invited in other countries, he has around 10 days each time to travel. You can invite him anywhere you are, and provide him with the sustenance and travel expenses or whatever he needs. He will come to you and reach your community and the community surrounding yours. So there's a lot of effort all around is being put out to reach humanity and to bring this to every human to hear it, because they have, every person have to hear this teaching once, and then we are done with them. It is their decision, they want to see the truth in it or not. It is not a call, it is God's revelation, it is God's truth. We don't keep you here if you don't want to be in the mission or not, and we leave you to God, and hopefully eventually a lot of people will see the truth in it and come together, create comings of life, and create the kingdom of heaven on earth. Therefore, the first step in the comings of life is awaken our spiritual forces. Meditate. Know thyself. Concentrate. Look at yourself to see what are my habits, what is my resistance to God's will. What is that make me don't want to listen to God, but I want to listen to my own will and wish and desires and attachments, but I don't want to completely say no. I don't want to be the slave of my little ego, but I want to be surrendered and submit to God completely. So that is knowing thyself. How would you do it? Some people close their eyes, they meditate, they do formal meditation. Of course, that is the fastest way, because you are closing all your senses. All your senses are like five strong, powerful cords are pulling you towards the external world. And when you close your eyes, this is one of the greatest senses of human. But what do? We see first before we desire, don't we? Or we hear first, you know, before we desire. Okay, if there is nothing about a wonderful thing in television or in the store and you don't see it, you don't know it even exists. You have to see it first and say, oh yeah, I want that. Or whatever that eyes desire. So the eyes are a very powerful sense that God to admit it, our desires. So when you close your eyes, you close a great sense of pulling you out to the external world. Then, of course, you start listening to the breathing within yourself. You breathe in Hariom Shariham. You watch the silence between Hariom Shariham, breathing in and breathing out, and you say Om Nam Kevalam. Then you watch that silence between breathing out and breathing in, and you say the goal of the life is to become divine, that divinity. Now you're not hearing any attraction or external world either, because you are hearing the breathing and the mantra and the meaning of the mantra. The goal of the life is to become divine. Therefore, you are also shutting another strong, powerful senses, which is hearing and listening to others or voices that pull you toward the external world. Of course, your sense of touch, it's within yourself, and all the senses also are quiet, done, and directed toward within. But where can you know yourself? You can know yourself within yourself. It's not out there. People looking for happiness all over the place. They think if, you know, they have this and that and that and that, they're going to be happy. Are they? The more we have, the more you see people become less happy. And lose their touch with the reality, and the ego become big and large and huge and greater, and someday they completely is disconnected to God, and they just accept a couple of dogmas and say, yeah, if we accept this couple of dogmas, we're going to be saved. But God said, no, dogmas do not save you. Your tradition, your culture, your background, your preacher cannot save you. You have to listen to God and His scriptures and His prophets. And to do that, you have to completely quiet down your senses. So, it is within you. Don't look in another person, and don't look in another place. Don't say, oh, if I leave from here to somewhere else, I'm going to be okay. You won't, because you are taking your time with you wherever you go. It is with you. It's within you. Everything is within you. Your happiness is within you. Your God is within you, your realization within you, your salvation is within you. Therefore, that is the mystical path. That after you do that and you know thyself, what is the next step? Hey, I want other people also know them thyself. I want they also awaken your spiritual forces and become great and know thyself and feel the Spirit of God and closeness to Him and awaken and realize and overcome all the, you know, pitfall and don't want much and they don't look for stuff out there to accumulate in their life, but they want to be a channel for God. Therefore, we can see the next step is to create an environment that is going to help also other people to become self-realized and become great people. And that is the teaching of the Old Testament. If you read the Old Testament, you can see that God is trying to choose a people for himself as the 12 tribes of Israel. What's a tribe? Tribe is a community that the people live in. And the communities that God was trying to create in the Old Testament is the communities based on God's law. They accept him as the king and follow his laws. And exactly as far as they did that, they were different than the neighbors. They were blessed. They were, you know, in God. But eventually, of course, they longed for a human king. And, of course, Samuel went to God and said, God, they rejected me. They don't want me to be the judge. God said, no, they didn't reject you. You have such a big ego, Samuel. It is me, you know, they rejected, because I am their king and you are my judge. They are not their king. You know, God is the king, but they don't want God to be king. They wanted the earthly king, and even worse than that, most people want to be king themselves. And they let them, their ego be the king of their life. So the whole Old Testament is showing their struggle with God to create the king, the community that accept him as king and his laws as the law of to follow. And of course, they failed and they could not completely accept him. And that is why he elaborately brought a lot of rituals to them, so it focused them back to God all the time. That's what ritual is for. Ritual is not to something you do automatically, but you turn around. You go toward the world and suddenly say, oh, this is the time to do the reminder. You turn around. You go back to God. Oh, it's time to go to do something else. No, it's time to do the reminder. You turn around. You see, that is the baptism. That is the act of baptism. Ritual is an act of baptism. You pull yourself away from the world and you say, I want to go to God. I want to do. So the more you do that, the more you're going to be turned around. The more you're going to be baptized. If you do 10 times a day, you're baptized 10 times a day. If you're doing 2 times a day, you're going to be baptized 2 times a day. So that is the Old Testament to create the communities of life. Communities of life is where God is accepted as king and his laws as the law of the universe. And therefore, they bring the compassion, love, understanding, cooperation, teamwork, and oneness with each other, and in community, you become a large family that are one with each other, and your ego is not in the way, but God comes through you, and the more God comes through you, the more you become one. The more you keep your ego, you feel the community is not a part of you, and you are not a part of the community, and you will not last in such a community which God is so strong and powerful. And also, the more you come closer to God, the more your will be done, but God will. And therefore, you can see that's what the Old Testament and Hebrews were trying to manifest to humanity. And that is the example that Hebrews left for humanity to see that the coming of life, accepting God as the king and his laws as the law, is necessary to bring the kingdom of heaven on earth. And the next step in the creation of communities of life, which is the base of the kingdom of heaven on earth, is realizing if I'm in a community and if I'm self-centered and obviously what's in for me in this community, that community will not last and it's not going to be a community of life. Therefore, the next step is to sacrifice, to be able to give up yourself and say, no, not all the time, what is it in for me, but what is it in the community? What can I do in the community? How can I help? How can I improve it? And as you do that, of course, the community will improve, and you will be known in the community as a great personality in the community, and you will advance in the community in the position of the leadership or higher level and all that. So the next step is sacrifice in the communities. And that is, of course, very well demonstrated with Christ. He went all the way to the cross and showed us that even if it is necessary for an ideal, you know, to sacrifice the body, so be it. You know, you will be able to go all the way. But of course, it is not necessary. He has done it for us. He, his blood shed, and the Lamb of God has been sacrificed, and the grace has been released to humanity. Therefore, we don't need to do that. He has done it. The grace is in every one of us and released to all of us. But with the grace in the community, the grace is not self-centered. As I said, the moment we are self-centered, the grace is cut off. Absolutely is cut off. The less egoistic and self-centered we are, the more grace will come to us. And what he showed us, to receive the grace, to create the comes of life, sacrifice is necessary. So the message for humanity from Christ was sacrifice, and in the community we should put the community's well-being in ahead of your own well-being. As the community prospers and it becomes well, you will prosper and you will do well. And now, as we said many times, you sacrifice, you meditate, I think it must be supposed just a little bit, you create the trust, create the promise of life, and you sacrifice for it, and nothing happens. You feel, wow, what am I doing? All this effort I'm giving satsang for 20 years, and was just few people really listening to it, and even those few people, you know, they still completely are not with it, or all that, and all, you know, what is this that am I doing? Well, do you realize it? No. You're attached to the results. You want something to happen for you. You think you are the doer. You think, you know, you are the person giving the satsang. You are the person who's going to create the kingdom. You are the person who's going to create the comings of love. You're going to person to attract people come to the mission and listen to this revelation and thing, and then saying, there's something wrong here, and that's why I'm so depressed and unhappy and all that. That I'm thinking, why is not happening? Why is not happening? So he said, okay. It's not up to me. It's up to God. You know, it happens or not. So you surrender to the result and say, okay, I gave the satsang. I tried my best. I'll do it over and over and over as far as I have the breath in my, you know, body. And after it is, it's up to God. I'll give the purest revelation possible, and I'm not going to tell what the man thinks, but what God thinks. That is the, that is how we can purify religion, by realizing what God thinks. Really, did he send all this religion, or did he just send one of them? Or are we the really elect? Are we culture and tradition is most important, or the word of God? And that is the greatest obstacle in receiving the new prophet and new revelation. The tradition or culture of bringing up in different religions, accepting that that is the only way and it's the best way and all that. And they start saying, okay, let's stop. Let's stop here and say, okay, I have no culture, I have no tradition, I have no religion. What did really God say? And live though with that attitude, not with the attitude of it's from the devil anyway. So I'm just going to look at it as something reject already. No, don't do that like that. Just go with the open mind and forget about what you know. Otherwise, you know, you can't, you know, completely see the truth in it, in this revelation. And then, of course, you know, you realize that you are not the doer. You know, that God, you are attached to yourself. That is what the, you know, depression comes. That's when you say, oh, I'm tired. I had enough of doing this. If you know this is the will of God and it's the word of God, you shouldn't be tired of it at all. You should do it over and over and over and over and over to the end of your life. So that is how you combat the depression, by surrendering the resolve to God. Of course, later on you realize the greater truth, and that is Him. If God is everything and everywhere, and the Spirit of God is within each of us, who is the doer anyway? He is the doer, and I am just a channel for Him, and always be surrendered and submit to God completely, and let Him do the work through me. Will He do the perfect job? He will, because God is perfect. If He is doing it through you, the job will be perfect. If he comes through, if you think he comes through you and the job is not perfect, is it God doing it? No, it's not, because God is perfect. How can God make mistake? How can God do something that is not perfect? Okay, therefore, you can let him come through the son, and if he's doing the job, who's the doer? He's the doer. Who's the attached to the result? God is going to be attached to the result. If he is, of course, he's not attached to anything. You know, he is independent of his creation. The creation depends on him, but he is not dependent on the creation. Therefore, you know, we have to realize he's not attached to the result of action, of course, but he does the perfect job. That message has come from Islam. This means come from the word Taslim. And that means surrendering and submissive to God. And after that, of course, still we might direct our efforts on only a part of the universe. Our community, our city, our nation, even Earth. And the next step down, you have to expand yourself, the whole universe. Realize God is your father and mother. The universe is your home. You have no attachment to any part of the universe, not even to Earth. Because after we are done here with this Earth, we have to go and bring the kingdom of heaven on other planets, in the planet Krypton or something. Whatever planet there is, we will go there and we will continue bringing this great revelation and the kingdom on those planets. So it's not going to be the kingdom of heaven on Earth, it's going to be kingdom of heaven on Krypton or whatever, you know, the planet is going to be. So we can see that the next step is universalism. Universalism has come from the teaching of Bab and Baha'u'llah, and they brought the idea that all religions are basically the same, all have the truth, and they have come from the same God. Therefore, we have to become united and realize God is one. And that is a great teaching. Actually, a lot of people compare our teaching with Baha'i teaching, and as you can see, it is not the same. Our teaching does not say all the religions are basically the same, therefore we have to you know, become united because God says the same thing in the religion. We can see here, every religion has a specific message for humanity. The mystical path is to know thyself, to the Old Testament is the creation of the commons of life. The New Testament is sacrifice in order to create the commons of life. Islam is surrendering and submissive to the will of God. And Baha'i is the universalist. This five step is the five step of the eternally one path. It awakens your spiritual forces, therefore you know thyself. Knowing thyself is to know God. To know God is to know what is His will for you and how you can accomplish that will. The second step is the creation of the commons of life. It means to bring like-minded people together, create an environment for everybody to grow physically, mentally, and spiritually. And the next step is to sacrifice, not being self-centered, and become submissive. Surrenderness of the city of God and become universalist. So when you create the commons of life, it's easy to live by yourself somewhere in the mountain or in your apartment or in your house and say, well, I'm just a wonderful person, I'm just a good person, you know, and all that. But if you live in a community, there are another 11 people living around you, then see how good you are, you know. Then you will even accelerate your own spiritual progress and knowing thyself 100,000 integrated. Of course, if you want a lesson, if you don't want a lesson and you don't want to meditate, if you don't want to know thyself, if you don't want to have ignorance, resources, no matter where they put you, you're going to just keep your ego and just listen to your own little desires and wants and never progress. So the comes of light now still needs you to take the initiative to open yourself to the energy and become a part of it. If you are not a part of it and you keep, you know, keep your ego still intact, it doesn't help you much. Maybe a little in the long run, but not as much as it could if you are open to the energy to come to you. So it comes up, none of them is going to work if you are not willing to listen to God. Therefore, you accelerate and come to your knowing thyself, and you become in greater degree accelerated in your progress, then it's a sacrifice. You forget about ego. All those what is in for me, okay. You are leaving your apartment, you have all these amenities and comfort for yourself, and you think, wow, I'm such a great guy, you know, and a good gal. And but when you say to somebody come and say, well, let's share a little of your thing with other people, you get very upset and say, no, this is mine. You know, don't touch it. This is my home, this is my, that is kind of a dog mentality that, you know, I even do this myself and I'm not going to share. Sharing is not a good idea. It is a law. It is the law to share with one another. And therefore, in the comes of life, your ego will be modified to learn to share, and instead of always keeping whatever you have and all that. And of course, in surrendering and submission, you know, what is the greatest achievement in a human life is to become one with God. And the fourth seal actually accomplishes that, because you let God come through you to do the work. The more you do that, the less of you will be there, the more of God will be there, and therefore you will be more godly and one with Him. Therefore, the fourth seal is the greatest spiritual achievement, to become surrendered and submissive to God, of course, to know His will first, which is the etymology one path. Of course, all this step, the seal will be narrow, shatter every knot, all the narrowness of the mind, the electricity, separation, destructive tendency is to realize God is one. There is no separation between any part of it and the other part. Therefore, you do not separate yourself by nationality, religion, race, or any other ism, but universalism, and you see God as your father and mother and the universe at your home, and everybody in it, and every part of it, the part of the struggling traveler with you. So you shatter the knowledge of mind, and which is the base of all the suffering for humanity. With all this five steps, you become an elect. And I said, the real elect have been in process of being created for the last 12,000 years. I don't have to teach you how to meditate. I can help you, probably you have forgotten a little bit, and I can, you know, nudge you a little bit toward, you know, realizing how to go back to meditate, but you love to meditate, you like to know thyself. Actually, you have been struggling to know yourself all your life. You know, you are different than other people. You know, you want to know thyself. You don't want to just live like everybody else in a half asleep and in delusion of this is the real life and accumulate a lot of wealth and then leave it behind and you can't even take your body with you, you know, when you die. So it's not a good idea of waste your time for something that you cannot even take with you. The only thing you take with you is your soul. And that is what where you have to become wealthy. Become wealthy in soul, not wealthy in the material thing. Have a material thing for the minimum comfort, but concentrate the rest for your greater spiritual progress. You have already know how to meditate. You know, you have been living in community of life. You love to be in community of life. You don't want to be alone and lonely and self-centered and egoistical and all that. You know, your sacrifice is easy for you. You can easily give up yourself to the community, and you can become surrendered and submissive to God easily and become one with Him. And the universe, of course, is your home. You already knew that you love the whole universe. You cannot separate yourself. Such people are elect. That is the sixth thing in our teaching. The elect is the people who are intellectually strong, visibly aware, spiritually incorruptible, and the great soul that they follow eternal divine path, and they have the quality of all the classes of the human. They have the ability to come to this mission, take charge, realize my teaching, teach what I teach to the rest of the humanity, and they forgo their own teaching, but teaching of God, and they will bring this teaching to humanity, so everybody who is elect come to us, and those who also are called for this mission come together. Therefore, you can see this is the time of sundering. This is the call for the elect to come. Those who are not elect, you know, I'm sorry to say that might not be incarnated for a long, long time until they learn the lesson and eventually come and join the kingdom. The shaft and the reed has been grown together for the last 12,000 years. Now this is the time to gather the reed to the barn of the Father, and those who have progress will be incarnated again and again, and I will incarnate also with them, and eventually we will bring the kingdom on earth. So the East teaching is the seventh teaching. The elect, the sixth seal, are those that did bring the kingdom of heaven on earth. And the seventh sealing, of course, unifies them, explains them. Everything is explained here in this mission for humanity. Any question? You know, some people say there are other rooms that people have a lot of questions. Why don't you come here and ask us? And we will clarify it for them, and we'll answer their questions, and they will see what we say makes sense. This is at the base of our teaching. Now you have heard it, go and teach to every person, every individual, every corner of the earth. Start your own room, that call it whatever you want. You can teach a part of the teaching, or a whole teaching, or whatever, but first of all, teach them the eternal divine path, and let every man and woman and child hear this great revelation from God and bring the kingdom of heaven on earth. That is the goal of this mission, and eventually many people will become divine. Now, this is my explanation of the basic of the teaching is finished. If you have any questions, raise your hand, and I will answer your questions. Go ahead, John.
Maitreya, my question, can you hear me? My question comes from Tho. Several times in Tho will mention something similar to this, which I find in the Holiest One, verse 10. Furthermore, this force, referring to the Tamaguna, is the one which fixes the things in the mind and enables the consciousness to visualize them. In other words, it creates the visualization or screen for things to be seen in the universe. Does that also mean it creates the screen for all other senses to perceive things as well, beyond just visualization? That's my question.
Yes, all the senses, they send signal to the citta. Citta is the part of the mind that crucifies and visualizes and makes a person sense it, see it, taste it, smell it, touch it, hear it. And anytime any of the senses receive one of these signals, the signal is sent to the citta, that it is the connection between the mind and the external world. It is the very finest ether in the universe, and it, therefore that's what it sends. And we see, what does it see? You know, the eye sees, or it's really your soul sees it. You know, the eye doesn't see. You take your eye out of your socket and put it there, still sees? No, it doesn't. It's finished. It's not connected to your brain. It's not even brain. Take your brain out and then put it there. Can you think anymore? It can't. What does it do that it thinks? There is something beyond the brain which thinks, is able to, you know, perceive and sense and all that. So we can see that the physical body, including brain itself, is not the seer, doer, or sensor. Therefore, there has to be something else beyond the brain. Does it? Because none of the function of the body separately will function correctly. And some people say, well, the total body together makes a person. Therefore, if we have a heart and a lung and a stomach and a foot, get it from different dead people and put them together, will that work? We still see, no, it's not, because the total is there, but the life form and the spirit is not. Therefore, we can see there has to be something beyond this physical body we see. And of course, you know, science cannot see it. You know, they even try to measure a human after death. They said if there is something there, if they put in the scale that the person dies, if there is a soul, they can see the difference between dead body and before that, and because the weight didn't change, therefore there is no soul. That's what they concluded, because the weight didn't change. But soul doesn't have rate. It's always everywhere in the universe. It's nothing that really lives. It's just the connection is severe. And you're not connected to the spirit anymore. Therefore, we can see that there has to be something beyond this physical body. And that is where the physical body is connected to the soul by citta. Citta is created by the tamaguna, and it receives the signals from our senses, and then it senses it, the mahantattva, part of the mind says, yes, you know, I know that, and I know that sense, I can understand that. I can feel that sense, you know, and sends the signal to the mahantattva. That, and mahantattva is the part make the decision. And it says, yeah, I know the sense what it is. So after it happens so fast, the moment you touch, we feel the thing, or the moment you smell, we smell the thing. But really it goes through the process of it. Going through our senses, our nervous system, to the brain, to the citta, and which keep the shape of the thing or the smell of the thing, mahantattva must take it as an active course and take it to the mahantattva, which says, I know, I recognize, I make the decision. Okay? Then, that making decision part of you, you know, of course is under the influence of soul. Soul is the real other part of the of God, or the universe, or mind. And then, according to where your soul is, you know, then you use that sense accordingly. Okay, as I said, if you have a surgeon knife, if you are a surgeon, you take it and your soul says you are a surgeon, you are a doctor, you have a promise that you will use this tool to heal people. Therefore, your action returns, you know, your mahantattva tells your mahantattva tells this decision to the citta and tell him, you will perform the surgery and heal this person and take the tumor out. And then he does that. He follows his conscious or so. And then if you give the same knife to a killer, the killer says, oh, such a good sharp knife, I can probably kill a lot of people with it. And therefore he sees the knife, the chita gets the form of the knife, Mahantattva takes it to Mahantattva, or decision-making part of the mind, and says, wow, that is beautiful. I can use this very easily to keep you. So the knife itself really doesn't have anything with the both of them. Knife can cut. That's all it does. It depends how you use it, and at the hand of whom it is. Therefore, you will use, you live according to your conscience, according to your soul. Okay. If your soul is tamaguna and self-centered and egoistical, you live a self-centered and egoistical life, and everybody says, oh, I had enough of these people, I don't have nothing to do with it. You know, if you don't, and you create, you know, you're in a higher level, and Vajri, you know, your Mahantattva says, hey, give a good satsang, go to different room and preach the teaching of the revelation, you know, don't waste your time, you know, to other rooms that they are not godly, you know. Go start your own. See, then you will be guided to do the will of God. It depends where your consciousness. So the citta, mahantattva, and mahantattva in everybody is the same. It is the soul. Where the soul is makes a difference. So answer your question, yes, every senses goes to citta. This is the tamaguna, the ethereal, the fine ether, that takes the form of that sense of touch, smell, sight, and all of that, and mahantattva, or mutative force, takes that sense to the mahantattva, or the sentient force, and sentient force decides according to your soul, and sends the signal back what to do. Of course, this is more than that. If you read the Universal Man, it talks about different senses, different carriers that carries the messages from your senses to the higher consciousness and all that. So it's more complicated than that, but basically, yes. Every sense sends their senses to the chitta. Chitta keeps the form, takes the form of that because it is crudified and fixes, and then Ahamtattva takes it to the decision making, and decision making will do it according to the soul. I hope it makes sense. Tijan, go ahead.
My question was in tablet 10 of commentaries on St. Matthew, verse 18, the very last sentence suggests that we be here now in command form in English. So it's a real suggestion that we do that. Can you explain a way that we can more concentrate our energy so we're here at the moment? And if we're here at the moment, and we really get good at that, isn't that the same as pure consciousness to be in beingness or amness? Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it makes sense. That's exactly what it is. That you have heard many masters and great teachers say, be here now. Or there was a gentleman that wrote a book called Be Here Now. Ramdas, you know, actually came out, you know, when I came first to the United States, and he thought Be Here Now. But it's a word, it's a really interesting word, because the moment you say be here now, then now is past. You are a couple of seconds in the future, and therefore you never can be here now. If you think about being here now and intellectually want to understand it, what it means, because the moment you say be here now, you no longer are here, because the second and moment and now is past. Be here now really means whatever is past is past, you know. Whatever is done is done. It's gone. It's in the past, and you have no control over it. The only thing you have control over is to learn your lesson. You will look at the past and examine your actions, and then conclude, well, that wasn't good, that wasn't good, that was good. I should do that more often. Those things that take me away from God, I'm not going to do it anymore. You learn your lesson from the past, but you give the past away, and you say, well, this is past. You know, I can do nothing about it. I forgive myself. I, you know, God forgive me for all my, you know, past that wasn't good. I try to be good and purify myself for the future. But future is not there either. Future is in the future. You are not there. You don't know what's going to happen. You know, I might just, you know, fall down and die right now in a moment, if God wills. And I don't know the future. I'm not going to worry about it. I was going to do my best to create the comings of light, and live in the coming of light, and when I'm old, the community is going to take care of me, and the younger people are going to come and join the community, and they will help the community, and the children are going to have a beautiful place to live, and the grandparents can teach them and take care of them and be useful. They start living in an apartment and feeling useless and thinking about themselves and get all kinds of disease in the minds, and, you know, going here and there, and this is other, you know, becoming, you know, follow God's way, which is coming of life, and the older people are going to be taken care of, and older people have a lot of wisdom. They have learned a lot through 50, 60, 70 years of life. They can teach the children a lot of beautiful things and give them a lot of story and all that. So, future is future. The only thing you can do is, you know, the better future is to create the coming of life. That is the only way humanity will, you know, be, you know, taking care of physically, mentally, and spiritually in all levels. So, future is in future. You can't do nothing about that. The only thing you can do, your best in this moment, you are. Learn from the past mistakes. Learn from the past. Improve yourself in the moment. Work for the future. That is being here and now. And being here now is a state of mind. It's not an intellectual explanation. It's not something to say, oh, I'm going to be here and now from now on. You know, I'm here and now. Am I here and now? Oh, no, I'm not here and now. But the moment I said I'm here and now, the here and now is gone. I mean, a couple of seconds in the future. Therefore, I'm not in here and now. You can't intellectualize it. You have to live here and now. You have to forgive yourself from the past and learn the lesson and hope for the future, and do what is necessary at this moment to create that future that you want to see to come. Therefore, you will be living here and now by doing that, because you realize that, you know, the only way to do that is to be able to be ready for the future and not being worried about what happened in the past and not worried about for the future, but knowing that the only good future is the future in the coming of life. That is what it means there in the be here and now. It is not an intellectual discussion, it's not something you think about it, but as I said, you learn from the past, you work for God's will in the future, you become more and more perfect every moment because you learn from your past. And what is the path of perfection? Anytime you become less imperfect, you are closer to perfection. Therefore, we don't expect you to become perfect tomorrow, but we expect you work hard to become perfect in your life. So that is what it means, be here and now. It is not an intellectual thing again. It is a realization of your past, improving yourself and working for the future of the best place for humanity. I hope that makes sense. The best thing to do for them is to read them though and tell them about the eternal divine path. Of course, if they are in a place that you can do nothing but, you know, then transition is to make them as comfortable as possible, provide their, you know, sustenance, and make them feel, you know, loved and bring them, you know, whatever they need and help them out as much as we can. And make them not feel, you know, cold or hot, and bring all the physical comfort for them. And eventually, of course, you know, you have to leave it to God to see what He wants to be done to them. And in that moment, at the last moment, you can't do much for the person. The only thing you can do is really make them comfortable. And lead them to scripture and make them become in a higher consciousness, at least at the last moment. Actually, if you are godly, that is a very, very important moment in your life, because you have been meditating, you have been progressing all the time. It depends where you are at consciousness in that moment. It makes your next reincarnation where you will be incarnated. Of course, your life work will be counted on, but in that moment, if you are godly, probably you are thinking about God and all that, but if you are still thinking about television, movies, you know, all those things, probably, you know, you're not very high consciousness, so it's very good. That's why in many cultures, they read the scriptures to the dying person to make them to at least, you know, concentrate in the higher thing in the Word of God. Therefore, my answer was correct, even though, not really. If they can listen, if they're in a place that can't, then, because I said, make them as comfortable as possible. In the comments of life, those questions absolutely are answered, because in the comments of life, the children are taken care of with the grandparents, and they can help, and they will be there, and they're loved, and they are helpful, and when, of course, the time for them is to come, if they are really high spiritual beings, they even know it, they are going to be gone, you know, because prana starts leaving your body 6 months before your death, you know, unless you are in an accident or something that happens suddenly, nobody can do too much about it. So, if you are very spiritual, you will know that your time is approaching and you prepare yourself. Just like those Indian, American Indians say, this is a good day to die. And they make their bed and go there and meditate and they leave their body. So, but in this time, the people are so disconnected from the self that death comes very hardly to them. Okay, and they are not prepared for it. They don't want it. They have attachment, desires for a lot of things in their life. And they cannot see the beauty of the death, of transition from one state to another, and coming back in the body, and that is why they are so resistant to God, and that makes it even harder for them, you know, because they're not prepared. Actually, the whole life you should be prepared to die. Actually, we die every moment. It's our cells die, you know. Every 7 years, our whole body, besides brain, you know, is a new one. So, it is, you can see, you know, everybody is dying. It's not something, it's not for death, it's not something to be afraid of, but should be realized that we have another chance, we will be incarnated, given another chance. The question is, did we progress in this lifetime? Why are we going on that? If you didn't, you're afraid with us because you didn't do our job. So what we can do for them, make them comfortable. Make them as comfortable as possible. And provide them with some place that they're warm, you know, taken care of and all that, and listen to God. I hope that answers your question. But this is the mission of Maitreya. It's the unification of all religions and the bringing of the kingdom of heaven on earth. We suggest that you go to our website and read about the Eternal Divine Path and our basic of our teachings and realize that God has manifested himself on earth in his fullest ever, so we can realize there is one God, one humanity, and we all come together as one people and follow his will. Go ahead, Tyra.
I'd like to ask actually the same question that Sarah G asked, only for animals. You apply the same concept to animals.
Yes, animals also should be taken care of. They are a part of human life and the earth's growth. And of course, they have to be comforted. They have to be provided, you know, as much as possible, you know, of course, but the life of human, of course, has the priority over an animal. If there is a place that you have to say that human or animal, human have the priority, but if you have an animal that he or she lived with you all her life, and you have been taking care of her, and she gave you comfort and companionship, and brought you laughter, and make you, you know, feel, know love, and you give you him love, and there's a great relationship between you two. He or she is a part of your family. You should be very, you know, concerned about them, you know, but they are there, created, you know, for us to take care of them and love them, and but human life should be prioritized to our animals. And so we have to take care of the humans suffering on earth first and eliminate those suffering first, and then of course when the community of life comes, the animals also will be taken care of. They will live in the community and will be a great part of it, and everybody will give them love, and also will return our love. But when the time comes for them to go, as same thing for them, we have to provide them with a comfort place to live and provide shelter and sustenance until they leave the body, especially if it's your pet or something that you have created a relationship with. But of course, again, you know, your family and people in your family have priority over animals. Animals know how to take care of themselves. But if you have an animal you brought him from the childhood and she doesn't know how to fend for herself or himself, you are responsible for them. You have to provide for them as much as you can. Again, in this time probably it is good to spend our time and energy mostly for the mission and creation of the community of life and kingdom of heaven on earth. You know, later on pets and animals are going to be living also in the community, and they will be taken care of and provided easily. So, if animals are taking us away from doing the will of God, then we have to, you know, decrease the number of animals we keep. Yes, Tiger, go ahead.
My question is, how does the body prepare 6 months before the death. I heard you explaining that.
Yeah, that is a good question, Tiber. The body have to be sensitive. Not everybody realizes this. When some usually they say, I don't feel good. I'm not the top of the world. I just feel bad and all that. But if you meditate and you are sensitive to your body, if your body is purified and impure, you will know that the prana or the life force is not entering your body, but actually leaving your body. And that is that American Indian probably would have realized and knew something, you know, is leaving, the energy is leaving the body, and therefore they prepare themselves for death. And it also happened to yogis. The yogis know, you know, the time of death they come because they are so familiar with the body and are so sensitive. But, you know, the body, so they can prepare themselves, they take care of business, they finish everything in this world that is world before them, and they have to take care of before they leave, and therefore they are ready to die when the time comes. But it does not happen to every person. If they are not sensitive enough to the body, they wouldn't know. Most people, they don't. The death comes and suddenly one day they are alive and next day they are dead. And they didn't know at all that the death is coming. Another sign is that usually the week before a person dies, actually they feel much better, they're more energetic, they feel, you know, they can get things done, they feel young, they become so elated to get things done, and they feel very good, and they say everybody that, I feel great, you know, and all that. Now, of course, that is, God is giving them the last opportunity to take care of the business, the life, and prepare themselves for the transition. And therefore, you know, they should not use that time to go play golfing or, you know, playing tennis or thing that is not, you know, taking care of the last businesses in their lives. So God is very compassionate. He knows death is just transition. It's not something that we should be afraid of. Nothing dies in this universe. Nothing is created. Everything is here, has been here, and will be here forever, and therefore there is no fear of death, because you have transited from one consciousness or level to another, and you came to this body for a reason, for a purpose. It is not just a joke or a play. It is the reason you are here, to practice physically, mentally, and spiritually. Of course, you have to take care of yourself physically, become strong. Mentally, you have to be study and become strong, and intellectually, of course, we have to practice, and spiritually, of course. We can see that, you know, all those things are necessary, but at the same time, realize when the death comes, it is not a big deal, it is just a transition from this lifetime to the next lifetime. As we have progressed, we have no fear of death at all. So that is how it works. You have to become sensitive to your body to know in 6 months the death will come to you. In the coming of life, of course, you know, everybody will become more sensitive about their body. They have more time to meditate, and eventually, hopefully, one day, you know, just like everybody, like that American Indian medicine man, knows the time of the death, and they choose a nice day and will go and lie down and pass it to the other world and come back, you know, again, the body and continue. And therefore, there is not such a thing as death in the mission. We just continue coming back again and again, and we do the same thing, and that is shows the justice of God, because if God gives us only one lifetime and tell us, that's it, if you make it this lifetime, that's when you go to heaven. If you don't, you go to hell. What kind of the just God is? If he bring me up somewhere I've never heard about any of these, and then he said, no, you go to hell, you born, you know, to eternity in that hell. You know, it just doesn't make sense. But the incarnation makes sense, especially in the last 12,000 years. Humanity has been reincarnated again and again and again to this point. In this point, God knows who is the shaft and who is the wreath, very well, and the weak will be incarnated and bring this kingdom to earth and provide an environment. And they, when the Shah is incarnated, they have no choice but to meditate, they are regular with the forces and progress. So we can see this is the defining point for humanity at this junction, and we can see all the signs is available to us in the war, the rumors of war, the knowledge is increased, the, you know, the separation between religions are greater, you know, and all that. So the, all the signs is telling us this is the end time, this is the time that all the prophets have prophesied to come, and God comes for judgment, and his judgment is if you are Shah, if you are not weak, you will not be incarnated. You will be kept away from the earth, and the kingdom have to come, and that's how this mission will be fulfilled to the elect, to those who have taken their spiritual forces, they love to carry the promise of life, they sacrifice for it, they surrender themselves into it, and they become universalists, and they become elect, and that is what the judgment is. The judgment is that they already God knows who is Shah, who is with. And that is what we are in that junction. And in the community, all these questions will be a part of your life, and you know the truth of the will of God, and death becomes so insignificant that doesn't really matter. That's another thing you can tell Christians and Muslims and Jews, that this is the judgment day. Okay? It's not the same thing they are asking, you know, why don't you go to cross? Why don't you heal me? Why don't you do this and the other prophets done? God have already done those. You know, it's done, it's finished, it's gone. It, you know, if you didn't get it by this time, I'm sorry to say, probably it's too late. You know, it's a time of something, it's a time of the, you know, who goes where. And the Spirit of God is behind this mission. He is the judge. He knows all of us in our heart, you know, where we are at and what we do and where we are, how much we could blame Him and how much our ego is still involved in it. And we have to let Him come to us so we can gather the elect together. We can bring the kingdom. We can create the promise of life. We can show humanity that we are, you know, God really exists. Well, though our holiest book, our scripture shows God exists. God says He's going to do this thing and He did them. Therefore God exists. And now He says this is the time of sundering. And that's what exactly the revelations and come from the prophets. There is going to be a time that it's going to be the end time. Of course, the end time to them was, to the regular people, was explained that, of course, there, some people are going to be in hell and some are going to go to heaven. But we know it is the new age coming. The golden age is coming. That is what he meant. Those who are well and made it, they're going to be in golden age and have a kingdom of heaven on earth for a long time. And those who didn't, they will be sundered, they will be kept away from coming back for a long time, unless until it is prepared for them to come and learn and progress. I hope it makes sense. It makes sense a lot to me and the way I can see the world, that there's a lot of war. People are killed, destroyed, you know. Why? Why do we need that? Probably we do, but those people are warmongers. They're distracted, or separate, there is separation between human and human. And they don't want to see this, and probably, you know, they will not accept our teaching. They're not going to come and join us. If they come tomorrow, we're going to have the kingdom they want. But we will wait. We will wait for God to fight our wars. And eventually, the elect will see that they have been looking for this revelation, and they will gather like an eagle together and will bring the kingdom and the promise of life on earth. No, we are not against anybody. We are not revolutionary. We are evolutionary people. Evolution tells us the next step is the golden age. And we will be incarnated into it and praise the Lord for a long time and bring His glory to earth instead of putting Him into the bottles of dogmas and culture or things that that human do. So we have to completely see the will of God, what's happening, you know. And what a wonderful God he is, because he has said he is going to do this thing, and he has done it. He has done it. He is powerful. He can do it. But he does not want to enforce his will on you. You have the will to follow him, or you have the will not to follow him. Yeah, that's as simple as it is. He's not a cultist. He's not going to say, no, if you don't do it, you know, you're going to be destroyed. You will be, but that's the choice he's been given to you, to make your own choice and say, okay, I choose God with the free will. I will not be concerned for man, but for God. You know? I'm not afraid of man. I'm afraid of God. And therefore, your choice then becomes very clear to you which way you want to go. Then we are living in a very interesting period of time, although the suffering of humanity is disheartening, but they have a choice not to. And that's what is given to everybody.
Maybe if you touch on that?
Sure. Well, that's a good question. That's a question a lot of people ask us by swastika. Swastika is the oldest symbol in the world. It is the symbol of the movement of the Kundalini, or the spiritual forces, that when it awakened, it is curled up the spine, and human knew about it thousands of thousands years ago, and actually you can find swastika in every culture in the world. There is no culture that does not know about it. Before Hitler has misused the sign for his own purpose, and actually there is a gentleman in Canada who has a website. It's all about swastika. It has a lot of pictures, a lot of information. American Indians know about it. Even in New Mexico, if you go to a city called Montanero, there is a hotel that the signs of swastika is all over the place. And if you study Hindu religion, they know about it and use it. Actually, the cross itself was the form of swastika. Actually, it is known, cross is known in many cultures as the broken swastika. So therefore, it is known to the Christian at the beginning of the Christ teaching spreading out. And actually, the Christian used to identify themselves with the swastika and put the swastika in their graves and in their doors and in their places. And so the other Christians know that they are a Christian and know that such a person is, you know, go to them and all that, because they were prosecuted also in the beginning of the Christianity, especially in Rome and all places. So, and also we have a book, it's called Swastika Book, under the frequently asked questions in our website. If you go there, it says Swastika Book. It has a link to that website of that gentleman from Canada. There is a city actually in Canada called Swastika. The paper in the University of New Mexico used to be called Swastika till a couple of years ago. So Swastika is not only what Hitler used to. Actually, that gentleman has a declaration of independence in his side that it says, it declares that it is completely, Swastika is independent from, you know, Hitler and the idea that a lot of people in the world are relating to the signs. And the explanation is why swastika is not a bad thing is that what I was giving around half an hour ago about the explanation of a surgeon knife. If a surgeon knife is in the hand of a surgeon, it can heal. If it's in the hand of a killer, it can kill. It's a very very sharp object, and it is made for cutting flesh. Is the knife is bad or good? You know, can you say, is it good when it's at the hand of the surgeon, and it's bad when it is in the hand of the killer. So it's the same thing for swastika. Swastika actually what was known as good luck sign in many cultures. So we recommend you go to that website of that gentleman, go to our website in the part frequently asked questions, look at the book. Actually the book has been published by Smithsonian in the around 1920s, and we find that book in the library here in New Mexico, and we took that and digitized it and put it on the sign, because we have had so many questions about why swastika, why are you using swastika. Swastika is a movement of the creation. It is the first sign of the Big Bang, that the universe was created, and therefore we had no choice. If we want to explain the creation, we know we had to use the same sign that is sent by God as the movement of the creation in the world. So we have no choice but to use that in to soften the concept. Of course, we don't call it swastika, we call it lotusika, which really is just to give the name that it can be exonerated and accepted and understood in a deeper level. So if you take the bad way of representing it by, you know, many, you know, many in a Western culture, we can see the swastika is not a bad sign. Actually, it used to be good luck. So, and Christianity, as I said, knew about it and used it, and actually crossed east the broken swastika. Therefore, go to our website, read about that book, go to the other side, study about it, study in other cultures. That's one of the good things about the mission is you're. We are open for you to go and study all culture, all religion, all science, and come to your own conclusion. Never follow the propaganda in the world. Never listen to the, you know, to the things that, you know, the culture have taught you, and you never really thought deeply, really it means what it means. They say this, and if you do that, you will expand yourself and you know about other cultures and how they use different signs, what they mean, and you come to your conclusion and say, well, how can a sign by itself to be good or evil? It depends how you use it. In this case, as if you study your teaching, in the sixth seal, actually the yellow swastika become white, become guiding light in your life, and you realize that this creation is destructive, destruction and death. Therefore, the only life is in God and going toward Him. And therefore, even this world, which is Tamaguna, become a guiding light for you. So we have to expand ourselves, study, read, meditate, and realize that, you know, what we are here is not always the truth. We have been, you know, completely brainwashed in a sense, to realize the meaning of the great thing that God has sent us. Actually, as the great culture has said, everything is upside down. You know, the more you climb this world, the more you go to the Maya and you will be lost. The more you climb back down, you go to the root and you go to God. Actually, if you can see the nervous system is like an upside down tree. You know, the root is up to your brain, and the branches come to your body, you know, downward for the earth, you know. So in other sense, the more you use and follow your senses, your desires, your wants, and all that, which is your nervous system, you more you go higher, because that is the upside down sea. The more you meditate and you close your senses and you go to your brain and your soul, the greater you go to God and realizing Him. So, you know, we have to overcome our prejudicity and culture and all that again, and open ourselves to the truth of God. And know God, what does He want? What does He want to say? What does He tell us? Not what the newspapers and television and propaganda of this world is telling us the truth is, but find the truth ourselves in a deeper level and teach it to others. That is very important, and hopefully one day even media and all that in the world will talk about God and greater thing and the truth, and political maneuvering or cultural biases and all that we have created in this world and has is bringing great suffering to everyone. So again, expansion of the mind, universalism, research, study, understanding, and all that will help us to overcome what is taking us away from the deeper truth of the world. All right, I guess that answers that question. What's Swastika mean? Go to our website, read the book, go to that website of that other gentleman, and study what it really means. Does it really mean what they say it means? Or does it mean something else? Has everything else also mean something else in a deeper level? The great Brad.
In the first couple pages of Zoe, there's the inverted heart symbol with the Christ us around it. I was wondering if you could give us an explanation of that symbol and its origin.
Yeah, I don't know what the origin of it is, but we find it in the one book when I was reading those. I have seen it in some other places also. Actually, there's another website. A gentleman told us that they have a link to our website, in his website, and he has that thing in his thing. Most probably it has a Jewish origin, because it talks about Yahweh. In the middle, and fire come out. It strokes me very, deeply and beautifully. And the meaning came to me as I explained it, though, that God is the fire of compassion. And He is the father and mother, and of course, Son represents the father and mother on earth. And so the Trinity is one, because there is no separation between the three, because you cannot separate God, the Father, from the creative force, Mother, and of course the Son comes as the representation of God, and so there are really one, there is only one God, and that is the consciousness and the creative force, which are one. But the explanation I